highs near 80, and for Friday night, mostly clear skies with lows around 63. For Saturday, it'll be sunny during the day, about 80 degrees. And for the evening, lows will be in the low 60s and a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. You're listening to WGTD, where we have news in the morning four times an hour. And we welcome you. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm very excited that we can be speaking today on the morning show about the important topic of literacy on this International Literacy Day. First of all, we have with us in the studio Cheryl Hernandez, who is Executive Director of the Kenosha Literacy Council. And Cheryl, it's great to have you back on the morning show.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
And via the telephone, I'm also so happy to be able to speak with a former WGTD colleague. Many of you know Marcia Connett. She's been involved in so many important things in and around the community. And she is the Southeast Wisconsin representative for a group called Wisconsin Literacy. And so she is joining us as well to talk about the importance of literacy. So, Marcia Connett, we welcome you to the morning show.
Well, good morning. It's an absolute delight to be here with you.
So glad that we can have this conversation. Since a lot of our listeners will already have some acquaintance with the Kenosha Literacy Council, let's find out from you about this organization called Wisconsin Literacy. And I think you are actually to be more properly identified the Southeast Regional Consultant. So tell us about the organization and about the work that you specifically do with them.
Sure. Wisconsin Literacy is a statewide organization that works with about 70 literacy programs, just like Cheryl's, around the state of Wisconsin. And we're pretty much in just about every county in Wisconsin which we're very excited for. And there are four other people who do the same kind of jobs that I do, caring for those literacy programs around the state. And we've been around for, gosh, more than 35 years. And our role is to make life easier for the literacy programs. We can help them with programming. We can help them with securing funding. We can help them with choosing materials. We can help them with trainings. We can help them with board trainings, things of that nature. So it's a very satisfying job on my end of things, but it also does some really important things for the literacy programs around the state who serve the needs of people who may need help learning to read or write better, maybe learn to speak English as a second, third, fourth, or fifth language, maybe need help with things like earning a GED, their high school credential that maybe they hadn't gotten around to doing. The programs also serve folks who need help with math or numeracy, as we call it. There's also the area of health literacy. We have an entire division whose sole purpose is to help people improve their health literacy, to help them understand and be able to ask the appropriate questions of their healthcare provider. And then the other area, well, two areas really that we're really focusing on very heavily right now is workplace literacy, helping people get the skills they need to get and keep good jobs, and also digital literacy. In this world that we live in, if we don't have the necessary computer skills or digital skills to access information or to even check information, we are going to be way behind. So there's lots of work to be done in the world of literacy.
So specifically, in, when it comes to, for instance, the Kenosha Literacy Council, and we'll have Cheryl follow up in just a moment, but for instance, what would be some examples of the tangible help that you would give to an agency like the Kenosha Literacy Council?
Sure. We are always so excited to partner with the Kenosha Literacy Council just because they do amazing work in amazing ways. So we might, in fact, just recently, they use a scoring system of assessing readers called Best Plus, and we were able to help them secure that testing for use with their students. We have a number of grants that are given to Wisconsin Literacy that we then disperse across the state. Cheryl's been a part of many of the professional development trainings that we offer to literacy program volunteers and staff. In fact, Cheryl very often is not just a participant, but oftentimes is one who brings her knowledge and experience to those programs to share with other people.
Very good. What would you like to add, Cheryl, in terms of the difference that Wisconsin Literacy has made in the work that you do?
I think it's a great partnership just to be able to learn from other literacy organizations across the state, and so that we can all kind of work together to bring more literacy to the state and educate adults.
Hmm. Marcia, before we let you go, I wonder if you could just say a word about what first drew you to want to be part of kind of the literacy movement and to try to make a difference in this particular arena. Did anything in particular inspire you to want to devote so much time and energy to this?
Well, it was in very, very roundabout way. When I was still an undergraduate student at UW Parkside, one of the first community placements that I did in my sociology major was I was placed at the Racine County Jail to work with inmates who had been picked up for driving without a driver's license. And the reason they were driving without a driver's license is they couldn't read well enough to pass the test. So my job was to help them learn to read. I didn't even know what the term literacy was back in those days. Nobody, I don't think anybody did. But I found it very satisfying, and just to see the progress and the commitment of these adult men, all of them, wanting to learn to read because they had that goal in mind of getting their driver's license was really where it started. And it wasn't until many years later that I was approached by a friend of mine who was leaving the position that I have now, who said, you know, you'd be really good at this. Between your background education in sociology and education, and a lot of the other work that I've done over the years in marketing and public relations and all those other skills that I can bring to this job, it really has been an amazing fit. And Wisconsin Literacy has allowed me to sort of build this position around the things that are so important to me. So, yeah, between that and knowing, you know, how many people suffer with problems related to low literacy, it really does make this a wonderful job to have.
Fantastic. Marcia Conant, Southeast Regional Consultant with Wisconsin Literacy. We really appreciate you joining us. I know you have a meeting to get to, but it was great to hear your voice again over the airwaves of WGTD. It's been way too long. Thank you, and best wishes to you and all of your colleagues with Wisconsin Literacy.
Greg, thanks so much. Hope we talk soon.
All right. Take care. Still with us, Cheryl Hernandez, Executive Director of the Kenosha Literacy Council. There's a couple of things, Cheryl, I am prompted to ask you about. One of them is that at the outset there, as Marcia was talking about literacy, she was, of course, talking about a term that seems to widen by the day. That is, once upon a time, I'm pretty sure, at the outset, the Kenosha Literacy Council and the Racine Literacy Council and other agencies like it were dealing with literacy in the most classic sense of the word, helping people learn to read and speak properly in English. And of course, now we're talking about all kinds of other forms of literacy. What kind of a challenge is it to work with this sort of ever-widening challenge? And to what extent do you still need to kind of hold firm in that initial sense of literacy, which is where all of this began?
Right. Well, I think at the Kenosha Literacy Council, we really see how literacy is the foundation for lifelong learning and success in life, right? Once we learn how to read, once we're strong in that, then we can tackle all the other things that we need to learn about in the world. And so I think that's really where we start, is let's build those foundational skills, those reading and writing skills, give them confidence speaking in English, and then how can we build on that? How can we help them learn more and be more confident and involved in our community? So technology definitely is a huge one, right? Helping people be able to use that effectively, especially with COVID the past couple of years and all of the virtual learning and things. That's a big thing for a lot of our students to tackle. Marcia mentioned math and workplace literacy, some of those soft skills kinds of things that are important for the workforce. Those are all things that we look at the Literacy Council.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that most of your clients actually are coming to you for the sort of purest or sense of literacy. I mean, literacy as it was once thought of exclusively. And then from there, there's the opportunity to branch out into these other kinds of literacy, which are also extremely important.
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
Very good. So typically, how does a client find the Kenosha Literacy Council, and do they need to be referred to you, or is it possible for someone to just kind of walk through the front door?
They can absolutely just walk through the front door. Most of our students come to us through word of mouth, so other students are our best advertisers. They go out into the community and talk to their friends and their family, and that's how most of the students come to us, but we also do a lot of connecting with other community organizations organizations throughout Kenosha and the school district. Last week we were at 7 different elementary schools for their open houses so that we could go out into the community and talk to those parents and promote our programs, because we know that a parent's level of literacy is the largest indicator of whether or not their child will be successful in school. So the more that we can help parents improve their education levels, their reading levels, the more they're prepared to help their children. And so connecting with the school district is another great way that we get the word out about our programs. But students can just come to the Literacy Council. We have a registration process that they go through so that we can do some testing, Marcia mentioned, and help them develop goals so that we can choose programs that are correct for them. And then we get started with their learning.
With a given client, when you meet them, when you assess where they're at, then what is typically the next step in terms of figuring out where to go from there?
Yeah, a lot depends on what their goals are. So we have students, we have two different types of students, students who are learning English as another language. So that's about 80% of our students. They've moved to Kenosha from some other place in the world. And then about 20% of our students are what we call ABE, or Adult Basic Education. So those are American-born English-speaking folks who maybe need to improve their reading and writing and go back to school to get a GED. And so it depends a little bit on which type of student they are. For our English language learners, we certainly do a lot of programming that helps them learn about our community and how to be actively involved in our community. And so depending on their goals, then we kind of put them in different programs that are appropriate for that. So we have a tutoring program that's more one-on-one and individualized, but then we also have a variety of different kinds of classes, conversation classes, and a citizenship class for students who are working towards that.
When we are talking about the sort of the classic literacy and the matter of somebody who is from another country, from another culture, where English is a new language for them, versus somebody who is born and raised right here in the United States, but for whatever reason has issues related to acquiring and mastering language. How different are those two challenges, and how different are, in a sense, the tactics or strategies by which those two kind of literacy issues are addressed?
Well, there definitely are a lot of similarities, and so we approach helping them learn to read and write in the same ways. I think one of the main differences is those English language learners definitely need lots of practice with conversation, so developing their speaking and listening skills and giving them opportunities to practice that so that they can build confidence to have conversations in the community. So for English language learners, that's a big part of the focus is those conversation skills. With the ABE folks, they obviously speak English quite well, and so we can focus more on the reading and writing.
Very good. We're speaking with Cheryl Hernandez, and we're talking about the good work done by the Kenosha Literacy Council. And today is International Literacy Day, and so we have a lot to talk about on this very, very special day. So talk about the not-so-small army of volunteers that are part of this effort. Of course, there is paid staff at the Kenosha Literacy Council, but by no means is the paid staff able to contend with all of the need that is out there. Tell us about the volunteers in general, who they are, and in general how they find their way to the Literacy Council.
Sure. Volunteers are absolutely the heart of the Kenosha Literacy Council, and we couldn't do what we do without them. Most all of the tutoring and classes are taught, led by volunteers. So it's so important that we have those people in our community who are willing to give their time. And they come from all different places in the community, all different ages. We have high school students and college students that are coming to us to do service learning experiences. We have retired folks. We have working folks who want to give back in this meaningful way. So all different kinds of people. You don't need to be a teacher or have any teaching experience. We have a training process that the volunteers go through to help them learn how to become a volunteer tutor. And we always need more. So if you think it's something you might be interested in, please come learn about us. We have a volunteer information meeting coming up in October, so you can contact us to get more details about that, but we would love to see you. In a typical year, we have about 200 volunteers that help us teach about 500 adult learners. So it's a very busy place at the Kenosha Literacy Council, and we can put you to work right away. So far this year, our program year begins in July, and we've seen about three times as many new students in July and August than we had in the previous 2 years. So we really need those volunteers. So if it's something you think you're interested in and you hear us talking this morning, please come learn more.
Tell us about the challenge of trying to do this important work during COVID. I suspect that especially early on in COVID, before we had vaccines and accessibility to really good masks and so on, it was exceedingly difficult to provide really any services. What were those early days of the COVID pandemic like for you?
It was definitely an adventure. We learned all kinds of new skills, but we felt really that it was really important to be able to continue the education services that we provide our students. They needed to continue to learn so that they could learn how to deal with this pandemic and everything that was happening, and so that they could be able to help their children who were doing virtual school and everything else that was going on. And so we felt like it was really important to find a way to continue learning. So we actually didn't take any time off at all. We had about a week. It just happened the timing was about our spring break time, so we took that week to kind of regroup and figure out how to move forward, and we started with virtual learning the next week, and so we were able to do that for the first several months, and it was interesting getting everyone online, many who have no computer experience before and maybe didn't have computers and tablets and things at home. We were all learning how to use Zoom and virtual learning techniques together. And then as soon as it was safe to get back into some in-person learning, we did that as well with kind of those safety precautions built in. And so today we continue. We still have some virtual learning options for those students who aren't able to come in, and but we're back to mostly in-person classes now.
Very good. I'm sure that's a big relief for
yes.
everybody involved. So what kind of a waiting list do you have in terms of the considerable need out there versus the amount of help that you are able to give according to how many volunteers you have?
So we very thankfully, the way that our program is structured, we don't have a waiting list. All of the students can start immediately. Most students start in our drop-in tutoring program. And so within the time that they register, we're able to get them started, you know, within a week or so of time. For particular classes, they might need to wait a little bit of time until the next class starts. So if they specifically are wanting to come to a citizenship class, for example, that class is offered 4 or 5 times a year. So if they've come to us for that class and there's not one happening for a little bit of time, they'll need to wait for that. But otherwise, the students can get started right away. So we're thankful for that. But again, that depends on those volunteers. So it's so important that we have those people coming to help us.
I want you to try to put into words, although I don't think it's easy to do so, but try to describe in words the kind of relationship that often develops between these volunteer tutors and the people that they are serving. I can remember from interviews in the past just how moving it was to hear about that tremendous sense of connection and, of course, that great satisfaction of knowing that you're really making a difference in someone's life.
Absolutely. I think that we all think of the Literacy Council as kind of a home away from home or a second family. And so we really work to build that sense of community. And our volunteers often share that they get just as much out or maybe even more out of the experience than they feel like they're giving. So they definitely learn a lot from their students. They feel like that sense of satisfaction when their students are able to meet their goals. And I think we all benefit from learning about each other. Our students are all from different places in the world. And so we get to kind of learn about their countries and their cultures, and we get to try their food and all of those wonderful things. And so it's great to be a part of their lives in that way.
I know that quite a few of your volunteers, although by no means all of them, are retired teachers.
Yes, many.
Who come in already knowing a lot about teaching. I suspect that even for somebody like that, they still need some preparation in terms of how to be effective as tutors, let alone somebody who just has a big heart and wants to help but has never been a teacher in any way, shape, or form, at least as we typically think of that term. Just take us inside that process by which people are prepared to do this really important work, and what are a couple of the most fundamental things that they need to learn in order to be able to really do this well?
Right. So part of that training process that we have, we learn about adult learning styles and working with adults, how to teach adults. It is different than working with children. So a lot of the retired teachers have kind of that elementary school background. So we focus on adult learning styles and how, you know, their goals and things affect their learning. We talk about the basics of reading and the foundation of how to teach reading, phonics, and all that. Those good things. And then we teach specifically how to use the main curriculum that we use at the Kenosha Literacy Council. So those volunteers get to do a lot of role playing and practicing and kind of some student teaching situations before we get them into the program. But then we also have in-services throughout the year, so a couple of meetings every year where we get to do some additional learning for the volunteer tutors as well.
Very good. So it's probably important for us to just take a little bit of time to make sure that people understand all that the Kenosha Literacy Council offers. And I think we've already talked a bit about this literacy, this tutoring in kind of the most classic sense. But talk about some of the other things that the Kenosha Literacy Council offers that, in a sense, enlarge our understanding of what literacy is.
So one of our core classes that we have at the Literacy Council, we're gearing up to start our new year in just a couple of weeks, but it's called our ELL Civics class. And so it's an English class where the students are learning about the community. So they learn different topics. They learn about the public school system. They learn about their employers and how to communicate at work. They learn about how to use the library, banking, healthcare. They learn a little bit about our local governments and how to communicate with fire and police in an emergency. They learn about housing, so if they're needing to rent an apartment or looking at buying a house, what kinds of things are related to that. I mean, it's a very experiential class, so for every topic that they learn about, they're bringing in some kind of speaker or going on some kind of field trip. Again, to get the students more engaged in our community and feel like they can be successful when they have to go out in the community and have those conversations. So those are things that we all do on an everyday basis that I think we sometimes take for granted, right? It's as simple as dropping your child off for school in the morning and having to talk with the teacher and say good morning. For somebody who's language is not English, that's a very challenging, scary thing. And so we can give them the vocabulary and the skills they need to be confident in those things. So wow, that's a main program.
Love that. Some other things.
Yeah. So we also have a citizenship class that's preparing people who are going through the naturalization process to be able to pass their citizenship test and become citizens. So that's always a very rewarding thing when we know we can help make new voters in our community. Mm-hmm. That's very exciting. And we have some other classes, conversation classes. We have a series of classes that are for kind of our more advanced students. They're conversation focused. One of them's called Adventures of Awaits. And so it's a series of classes that we do in the summer and the fall where students go on different kind of adventures in the community and learn vocabulary and practice speaking English and learning about new resources in our community. So some of the things they do, they've gone kayaking with the Kenosha Sailing Center, which is amazing and a great opportunity for them to learn about a resource in our community. They visit Harbor Market. They go hiking at different parks. So lots of fun things like that. We also have a community connections class. It's kind of a service learning based class where they take on learning about different nonprofits in the community and then choosing one to do a service project for. So most recently, they did a collection for Women and Children's Horizons. We also have an art club. So they're going out in the community and visiting different art galleries and things like that, and learning about different art in the community and then having conversations and doing writing about that. So just many different many different ways for the students to learn and get involved in the community.
That's amazing. And it sounds like you really have your finger on the pulse of what the needs are of people in the community. I mean, you're not just sitting in an empty room thinking these things up, but in some way it reflects what you're hearing from your clients in terms of what their day-to-day struggles are.
Yes, hopefully we are doing that well. So we have a wonderful group of students, our student advisory committee, and so they volunteer their time to help us, give us feedback on programming and things like that, but we're also always surveying our students and getting advice from them about what they need and which programs they benefit from the most.
So typically, how long does somebody have a relationship with the Kenosha Literacy Council? And maybe it's impossible to generalize. I don't mean the volunteers. I mean the clients who are coming and receiving what you have to offer. I mean, are we talking about weeks, months, years?
All of the above. So it depends on the student and what their goals are. And we always tell the students we come in and we want them to kind of be here for it. Short amount of time they need to move forward with their goals. So we're just kind of a stopping point till they get to the next thing, whether that be transitioning to programs at Gateway Technical College, whether that be a job, whether that be just kind of moving on to that next thing. We want to get them there, obviously, as fast as we can. For some students, it is a month or two maybe that they're with us. Maybe we usually say on average about 6 months, but we definitely have students that are with us for a year or two or more, depending on what level they start at and what their goals are. And it's just a wonderful experience for those students that are with us for a longer amount of time to watch them grow, and kind of they come in at that beginning level and maybe just speaking some basic English, and now, you know, they've moved on to, they've gotten a good job that supports their family, and they're maybe enrolled in some post-secondary education and working on those next goals in their life. And so it's just wonderful to be a part of that experience.
Hmm. So how do you pay the bills? I mean, this is a big undertaking, and in a sense, it's an undertaking that gets bigger by the day. So explain kind of the funding mechanism for the Kenosha Literacy Council and the way in which ordinary people in the community can be part of that.
Yeah. So as a nonprofit organization, we depend entirely on our community to support this wonderful cause. So our funding comes from grants, it comes from special events and fundraisers that we do, and it comes from donations from community members. So all of that makes the Literacy Council work. And actually, as Literacy Awareness Month, we have a series of events happening this month in September to not only promote literacy and bring awareness to literacy, but also to help raise some funds for the Literacy Council. So each week this month, we have a different fundraiser happening at a different restaurant. So tonight is our first one. We're going to be at Texas Roadhouse. Mm. So people can stop on out for dinner. They just have to mention that they want to support the Literacy Council, and then we get a little bit of the proceeds. Next week, we'll be at El Camino. And then on the 22nd, we'll be at Iguanawana. And closing out the month, we're very excited on September 27th to be at Ashling on the Lao. So we're so thankful to those restaurants for kind of partnering with us to be able to get some donations back to the Literacy Council. And people can visit our website to learn about all the details for those fundraisers.
Very, very good. So you go and have a delicious meal out on the town, and a portion of the profits that restaurant earns, every time somebody mentions the Literacy Council, then those funds go to you.
Yep, absolutely.
Sounds like a win-win. I remember seeing something on your website about groups that are a kind of giver that's like a page turner. Did I see that correctly?
Yeah. So those are often businesses who want to support the Literacy Council as sponsors. So they can be sponsors of our special events and be a page turner. And then they help support our programs throughout the year.
Very good. Anything else that we should be covering about the Kenosha Literacy Council?
I think just the idea that literacy is so important to our community, and everyone benefits when the people in Kenosha are more educated, then that makes our whole community stronger, and we all benefit from that.
By the way, what kind of connection do you have with your counterparts at literacy councils up the road or down the road or wherever or all across the state of Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think that's where Wisconsin Literacy really comes into play. They help us all connect with each other so that we can learn from successes that other programs are doing. We work closely with the Racine Literacy Council since they're our neighbors, but also other literacy organizations throughout the state in Madison and Milwaukee and Green Bay. And we can all kind of work together again and learn from each other and learn new programming. So that's
fantastic. Well, I'm so glad that we could cover so much of what you do. And in some respects, we've just scratched the surface. In particular, if somebody listening to this conversation feels like they would like to become a volunteer, what do they need to do?
Yeah, they can email me so they can find my contact information on our website, kenoshalit.org. They can visit us on Facebook and learn lots about our programs and events coming up that way as well.
Fantastic. Cheryl Hernandez is the executive director of the Kenosha Literacy Council. It was great to catch up with you, Cheryl, and to learn about all of the great work that the Kenosha Literacy Council is doing on behalf of the community. It's wonderful work, and it's great to hear about it. Best wishes to you, to your staff, and to that not-so-small army of volunteers that makes all of this possible.
Thank you very much for having us today.
Part two of the morning show is coming up in just a moment here on WGTD. Listening to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and here's part two of today's program. And for the next few minutes, we are going to be speaking with a very talented writer by the name of Rosie A. Brown, someone actually born in Ghana, but finds her way now to Central Maryland and is embarking on what promises to be a wonderful career as a writer. And with the blessing of none other than Rick Reardon, we can enjoy her writing now in a new book called Serwa Boateng's Guide to Vampire Hunting, a marvelous book intended for young readers. And we'll spend the next few minutes talking a little bit about Rosanne Brown and her story and what this series of books promises to offer to young readers. The books published by the Disney division of Hyperion. Rosanne Brown, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm excited to be talking with you. What a story. Tell us, first of all, in brief, how you found your way from Ghana to Maryland.
Definitely. So when I was a child, I was born in Ghana, and I was raised there until I was about three or so. And then my dad, he had the opportunity to study at Howard University here in the D.C. area where I live now. And so we all packed up and went with him so he could continue his studies here. And so even though I was, like, really young at the time, I still remember the culture shock of just being in one place, in one world with its own set of rules and customs and language, and then having to adjust to a whole new one with just a whole different set of how the world worked. And so I think that experience is definitely echoes through Serwa Boateng's Guide to Vampire Hunting, like that feeling of being the fish out of water, like culturally, personally, like on every level.
Yes, and that certainly is a theme that we find in this book, among others. Tell us a little bit about your very first efforts as a writer. I mean, what if we looked at those very first efforts, what would they look like or sound like?
Oh, gosh. So I guess it's important, before I start the story, it's important to mention when I came to America, I could not speak English at all. It was so bad. The teachers, they pulled my parents in, and they're like, if she cannot, like, figure this out, we're going to have to hold her back because she can't keep up. She can't talk to anyone. She can't follow directions. Like, it was very, very difficult for me for several years. I struggled. And it was not until I started sort of reading books, and my parents were handing me, like, book after book, and I was at the library every day, it really started to click in my head, like, oh, whoa, this is a way to communicate with people and to understand the language. And so my first attempts at it, they were honestly fan fiction, if I'm being honest, like just versions of the favorite books I was reading, like Harry Potter and Animorphs. But just like kind of versions of it where me and my friends were going to Hogwarts, so we were fighting aliens. And they're in a, like, one of those, you know, those marble black and white, like, composite journals you're supposed to do, like, homework in? Those are all full of just stories. Like, I did not actually take notes in class.
Well, something worked out very, very well because, of course, here you are. And with this wonderful book called Sarah Boateng's Guide to Vampire Hunting, it's probably important for us to understand how much the title character, the heroine of your book, is a reflection of you and of your life. Tell us about what you see as the most important parallels.
Definitely. I always like to tell people, like, Sir Will and I are not very similar personality-wise because at 12 years old, I could not fight vampires. But our experience that, like, coming to this new town and not understanding anything, that is definitely where the echo is. Because within the book, so she's been trained to be a vampire hunter her whole life by her parents, right? But after a hunt goes really wrong, her parents are like, this is unsafe, you can't do this anymore. So they dump her with her non-magic relatives in Maryland. And for the first time in her life, she has to attend public school and learn how to get along with normal kids. And so there's some of the whimsy and the fun of it, like, oh, she knows how to, like, use a sword, but not how to open a locker. But there's also that deeper level of you're coming to a new place and you are the outsider. Like, you are the one who, like, everyone in this town has known each other for years, and, like, it's one of those very small towns, like the kind I grew up in, where, like, everyone's in everyone's business all the time, and then you're the new person trying to navigate that and trying to understand where you fit in that. And I know that's something myself and lots of other immigrant children I know, like, have to deal with, like, this idea that you still want to hold on to your culture and where you came from because it's important, but also figure out how you fit into your new community without losing that. So I think that echo, that is where we're most similar.
Tell us about these sort of fiendish creatures, the vampires that that your title character is going after and defending the world from, and the way in which you have fashioned them, and where do the specifics come from in terms of how these vampires function in this world you've created?
Yeah, so Ghanaian folklore mythology has so many different kinds of monsters. And so it was hard to narrow it down, but the main vampire that shows up in the book, it's called an Ajit, which is a kind of vampire from Ghana that instead of turning into a bat like a Western vampire, it actually transforms into a firefly. And the very specific detail is when it's in firefly mode, it can take over someone's mind and turn them into a vampire. So the idea is anybody around you could be possessed by an Ajit and you would never know. And I think for me, that mind control aspect was what really drew me to this creature over just, like, the traditional sort of Western depiction of the vampire, because, like, I really like this idea of, so traditionally, it's like a Ajit would cause destruction and they cause bad things to happen if someone's possessed by one, right? But then what happens if you have someone who's just acting badly? Like, is it black magic? Is it the evil creature? Or are they just bad? And so I really want to explore that as Sarah Will kind of goes through the book and she starts to realize some of the monsters aren't that bad and some of the people she thought were monsters aren't that great, and kind of blurring that line of who decides who is good and who is bad.
I do love the way in which, for all of the kind of supernatural elements that are part of this story, this is also the very real story that a lot of young readers will be able to relate to, of a new kid in a in an unfamiliar school, trying to get used to things and dealing with kind of the mundane details of the day. And you write about that so persuasively, as if yesterday you were a middle schooler, because it just feels so authentic on the page. And it's also funny. Tell us about what it takes for you as not a middle schooler to find that sort of humorous link to young readers. I mean, how do you, in a sense, as the writer, find what will be funny for young readers?
Well, first off, I'm really glad I was not in middle school yesterday, because I found middle school real rough. I don't know about you, Greg, but I would not go back to middle school if it was a chance, like, as a student. But I've also been a teacher before I was a writer, and my students, I did teach middle school, and they're some of the funniest people I know. Like, their way of looking at the world was hilarious. So I knew, like, if I was going to tell this story and appeal to that age group, I had to be on that level. And, like, the book touches on some heavier things like immigration, racism, bullying. But I knew that humor was going to be the way I'd convey it and be able to get it across, because, like, I didn't want a dour book that made everyone depressed all the time. Like, I wanted that humor, that spring in the step. Like, I wanted it kind of to feel like a comic book, like, almost. Like, those old-day comic books, Saturday morning cartoons, like, that high-energy, fast pace. And part of that is the quips, like Spider-Man always making a joke before he takes down Green Goblin. And so it was very much, I think my students were a very big inspiration just on the way they talked and the way that, like, even the students who were, like, absolute best friends, like, I know these students were ride or die, they do anything for each other, and they were always roasting each other. Like, that's one thing. So us friends are always roasting each other, and I knew that would be a big part of making it feel authentic to how kids in this age group actually show friendship and affection.
A last question. This book bears the imprint of the one and only Rick Riordan, famous for the Percy Jackson books, and someone I've interviewed on this program, by the way. What does it mean to you as a young and still up-and-coming writer to have the endorsement of somebody like Rick Riordan?
It is still surreal, even though I'm, like, looking at his name on the cover right now, because... So I'm one of the OG Percy Jackson fans. Like, I got my copy in 2005 when it came out from the Scholastic Book Fair. Shout out to the Book Fair. And I was able, when my new book, like, the final copies were delivered a couple weeks ago, and I was able to hold, like, my copy of my book side by side with my copy of the first Percy Jackson book, which is all beat up and, like, broken in half and the pages are all ripped. And there's very much a feeling, like, without Percy, there'd be no Serois. And so knowing that someone who I looked up to so much, first as a reader and then now as a writer, and then just also what he's done, like, on publishing as an industry, giving voices to marginalized authors and authors of color to, like, tell our stories and our cultures. I am just so grateful to be able to just work with him and to know that, like, he's read my work and he thinks I'm funny. Yay!
I do, too. It's a great book. Again, the book is Sarah Boateng's Guide to Vampire Hunting, and it is published by the Disney division of Hyperion under the auspices of Rick Riordan, the author Roseanne A. Brown. Roseanne Brown, congratulations on this great success and best wishes to you.
Thank you so much. You have a great day.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, it will be the monthly visit of Nan Calvert, and with her will be Brandon Kohler, who is a graduate student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in their botany department, and he is becoming quite the expert on orchids, the orchids of Wisconsin. And so we're going to be exploring those beautiful flowers on tomorrow's morning show. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, WGTD.org. We remind you also that you can subscribe to the morning show as a podcast to hear a different morning show 7 days a week. Today, sunny skies, a high of 79 degrees with light and variable winds. Clear overnight, low of 62. Sunny tomorrow with a high close to 80. It looks like Saturday, mostly sunny and a high of 80, but then we get some much-needed rain in our forecast for Saturday night and into Sunday, especially when we see a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms both in the day and the night on Sunday. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn in Lake Geneva, NPR News and Class.